welcome to the Brown Bowl podcast. This is a podcast created for the love of food and meant to support you on a journey to making more vegan choices, no matter where you are along the way. I'm your host, Kim Sujovalski. I'm a teacher, a certified plant-based cook, and for years, I've been helping people go vegan or take more steps in that direction by teaching you how to cook delicious vegan meals, get back in the kitchen, and improve your relationship with food. So are you ready? Lace up those trainers if you're going for a walk, or grab a cup of coffee, get comfy on the couch, and listen in. Hey everyone, welcome back. Welcome back. Last week was nerve-wracking and special and important, and the episode, oh my goodness, I'm glad that it's out there and I'm glad that I did it. And thank you so much to all of you who have reached out and commented and, you know, left me your thoughts. I really appreciate it. It was a tough one for me to kind of record. And you'll see why. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, you're going to hear more about it in this episode. And I do want you to go listen back, because that episode was actually the introduction to this new series we're starting in the podcast. And today is part one of that series. It's called The Dieting Chronicles. But apart from giving you the introduction to this series, I had a public apology that I had to make. So I really want you to go listen back. And that way you can, you know, hear all about it. So today I was thinking, you know, what I was going to talk about at the top of the show today. And I've got two really exciting things to share with you. You know, I always kind of just head right into the episode. And then I thought, this is a great time to kind of share something that's been going on or something exciting that I've found that I think you might enjoy. And we've got a combination of those two things today. So first up is I want you to head on over to thenomadicvegan.com. You've heard me talk about this website and this blog's creator, Wendy Wernith. She is my favorite vegan travel blogger. And recently, as you probably know, I took a little trip to Panama City, very quick trip to visit family. And Wendy asked me to kind of report back on the delicious Panamanian vegan grub that I found there. And trust me, I found a ton. We ate so well while we were there. It was amazing. So many vegan foods, so many menus with vegan items marked as such, which was very exciting. And it was just pretty cool. And of course, I reported back and I wrote a whole guest post on Wendy's blog. So I want you to head on over and check it out. You can see all of the delicious food that I ate, including one of my favorite things on the planet, because I had never seen it or heard about it or tried it before. And it was sushi pizza. And I'm talking, of course, vegan sushi pizza. I can't describe it. So you have to go and see it for yourselves, because there's a picture. And of course, I describe everything. And I got the waiter to tell me how it was made, which is cool. And you'll hear all about it in that post. So head on over to thenomadicvegan.com, and it might be in the, you know, recently posted posts. And you can also use her little menus at the top to look for a particular place. So if you go and search for Panama, you're going to find my post. And I'd love for you to check it out and also give Wendy some of that amazing support you always give me, because she is doing like the really hard work to help everybody be able to eat vegan and discover, you know, the typical cuisines in each place she visits all around the world. It's really, really remarkable. And it's really exciting. It's a really fun blog too. And you're going to get hungry. That's all I'm going to say, because it's all about delicious vegan food. So head on over and check that out. And you can tell her you came from our website, so she knows, and she's going to just treat you like a total rock star, because she's amazing. She's really amazing. So that was one of the little things I wanted to share. The other one is something that it has nothing to do with veganism, nothing to do with cooking, but it has a lot to do in part, with what we're talking about today. And this is a podcast. And if you're, of course, listening to our podcast, that means you're a total podcast freak like I am. And you're always, you know, kind of ready to hear about a good new podcast to listen to. And you might already know about this one, but I have to totally recommend it. It's become one of my favorite shows. And it's amazing. It's by Lena Dunham. You know who Lena Dunham is. She is the writer and creator and actress in the show, the HBO show called Girls. And she is a complete body image rock star. And you know, we talk a lot about body image and just kind of doing things in a different way and being ourselves. And all of that is such a big message here at Bramble. And she is just a rock star at it. And she has this amazing podcast. It's seriously, it's so well produced. It's unbelievable. You're going to hear a lot of voices that you probably are going to recognize. And it's all about women, and it's called Women of the Hour. So go check that out. It's an incredible podcast, and each episode has a topic. She talks about aging or dieting or body or friendship or loss or, you know, and within that episode, she has all of these female voices, many of whom, you know, you've heard of, including some of the biggest activists and most amazing actresses who you didn't think were activists, but they are. And they discuss the topic and they give examples from their personal lives. And Lena is just the best host ever. You have to go check this out. So I thought today I would take the time to give her a little plug. Because, and of course, she's not sponsoring the show. This is completely on my end. I'm just a big, big fan. So I wanted to share it with you because it's very empowering for women. And I think we need more of those messages coming in through our earbuds now. And even if you're a guy listening to this, you need to listen in. You need to listen in to what is happening in the crazy minds of women. And by crazy, I mean crazy cool. The crazy cool minds of women. So go and check that out. Now we're almost about to head into our show today. But before we begin today's show, I want to tell you about a resource I think you'll really love. And I'm talking, of course, about our signature online program, My Bramble. It's what I like to call our big kahuna. It's an ongoing program, all in video format, in which I teach you to cook delicious vegan meals, get organized, give you support on your vegan journey, as well as tools to help you find a blissful and balanced place with food and with eating. And most of all, we cook and we cook and we cook in a way that is simple, teaching you why things are done in the kitchen so that you can become a total pro, creating vegan meals that everybody goes nutty over. There's so much more that is included in the program. So head on over and visit mybramble.com to learn all the details and to give it a try. So head on over to www.mybramble.com. Now, on with the show. Okay, so if you read our last week's post, or you listened to that episode, the introduction to the Dieting Chronicles, and that little public apology I gave last week, you know all about what this new series entails, right? And it's kind of meant to tell you and also remind me all about my personal stories with dieting. And there are so many. There are so many. And I'm doing this in the hopes that we can finally start viewing food in a different way and that we can bring it back to the wonderful source of sustenance and creativity and that delicious part of our lives that it actually is. And so that we stop viewing it as a source of stress or calories or points or grams of this as, you know, punishment or as reward. And I've decided to do this series in the hopes that we can get back to listening to our bodies and enjoying food again. You know, this anti-diet philosophy is something that I've been trying to share since the blog started, but it's also something that I have failed at, and I've failed many times over, and that's why I included the apology last week, that little public apology. You know, there are so many ways that we use to disguise dieting, right? And I knew all of them so well. One of them is healthy. We talked about that last week, right? Clean is another one. Unprocessed is another one. Guidelines, not rules. So, you know, having little guidelines, not strict rules. We feel that these things have nothing to do with dieting. You know, you name it, I used it. And believed that I was off the dieting train. I really did. I used these terms. I believed that I had completely left the dieting train when in fact I was in the most dangerous one. I was in the train that moves so slowly that you can't realize it's actually moving until it reaches its stop, and then it's time to get down. And then suddenly you have absolutely no idea how you got there or where you are exactly. That was totally me. You know, this website and our online program and this our blog and this podcast, they're all about sharing the love of yummy vegan food, right? That's kind of the center of what we do. And, you know, it's all about giving you support. But whenever it comes to food and eating, we need to talk about how we relate to it. We can't just skip this step, right? We need to talk about how we relate to it. And especially when it comes to being vegan, we have to talk about restriction. We have to talk about it. Not only because being vegan includes restricting by default, right? You're excluding the meat and the dairy and the eggs, etc. But because now there are countless mini vegan diets, from paleo vegan to vegan clean eating to, and here with this one, I like seriously cringe every time I hear this new term, eco Atkins. I mean, seriously? Seriously, we've got something called Eco Atkins now. We have managed to stay away from the anti-carb craziness, and now we've included a, you know, this Eco Atkins things to veganism. Oh boy. Oh boy, we're in trouble, right? So, you know, those days of being vegan and just feeling the joy and the freedom of eating any dish your heart desired, just simply making it in its vegan form, those days are long gone. They are long gone. And it took me such a long time to realize that this is happening. And, you know, some people have stayed true to this, you know, this way of eating, in which the only thing you're paying attention to is that, you know, you're making what your heart desires, but you're making it in its vegan form. Some people have stayed true to this, and my hat's off to you. But so many of us are now applying the dieting lens to vegan choices, and we've added another layer of must-nots, right, to the mix. We've added more must-nots, must not do this, must not do that, to the mix. And I am very sorry to say that I include myself in the second group, unfortunately. Again, hence the public apology. But thankfully, no more. I'm out of that train. I'm out of that train, and that's why I decided to create this series. You know, it was only when I stopped that restrictive mindset, when I actually started, and by started, I have to say that I mean that I'm working hard at this still, okay? This is a work in progress. I started to really heal the final remnants of a crazy and messy relationship with food. Now, don't worry. We're also going to discuss the inherent restriction of being vegan towards the end of the series. Okay, that's important because I'm going to be talking about things and you're going to say, well, veganism, you know, excludes a lot of foods. Well, a series of foods anyway. We're going to discuss that towards the end of the series. But for now, let's just say that restriction didn't just appear in my life, right? It isn't something that just happened to me and I was a victim to it. I practiced and I practiced and I was on the diet wagon and off the diet wagon. And it was a journey that took nearly 20 years and 23 diets. And these are the ones I can remember. These were like the official diets, right? 23. 23. And this journey is, of course, the topic of this series. And although I won't make you sit down to hear about those 23 in depth because you're going to kill me. And not to mention, by the way, the ones that I tried twice or three times over until I finally got the message, because that did happen on several occasions. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that to you. But it's so important to tell you the stories of the ones that made me crazy with food, not to mention with my body image. Body image and food and dieting, they all go hand in hand, right? You know, I used to think that it was my insane overeating patterns and emotional eating that started my fight with food. But in the great epiphany that I had over Christmas, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, we're going to discuss that later. Not today, but in another episode of the series. I also mentioned a little in last week's episode, so you can go check that out to see what I'm talking about. But in that little epiphany I had, I came to the tough truth that I had done this to myself. I had done this to myself through years of dieting and trying to control food. And I have since learned that what was actually happening is that I was actually trying to control something, right? I was in a situation in my life in which I wanted some control. And it's easy to control food when everybody around you is doing it and when all of the messages are headed in that direction, right? So yeah, that it took me a long time to figure that one out. And yes, of course, I learned some emotional eating patterns as a young child. And you can hear a little more about my story at bramble.com and throughout all of our episodes. But the bulk of my overeating was a result and not a cause of food restriction. And this took me so long to figure out, right? The bulk of my overeating was a result of food restriction, not a cause of it. And that's why, just as we did with our food stories and with our body image stories in previous episodes, it is time to pay the piper and look back into our dieting stories. So important. Okay, so on to dieting story number one, and it's what I've given all of these names, by the way. Some of them have official names, but I've given some of the unofficial ones, little names. The first one is what I have called my friend, and that's between quotes, right? My quote-unquote friend, the pineapple. Now, you've heard me say many times that I grew up in the most body positive and anti-diet household. And this is rare. And I'm so lucky. In my house, you know, food was our friend and we ate well, we ate deliciously, and we didn't count grams of anything or weigh ourselves. Food was just fun and it was pleasure. That's what it was. This doesn't mean, though, that I didn't receive dieting messages. We're all a target for these, right? In today's world. And even back then when I was a teenager. So the first body image reference would come, I mean, the first body image reference in my world, because I didn't have that growing up, would come from a group of friends in a dressing room. I tell the story in that old episode about the body image stories. I tell the story in depth. And that's where that came from, right? The first body image reference. And the first diet would come from my ex-boyfriend, who quickly told me one day that people were talking about how I was now only wearing sweaters because my stomach had gotten bigger. And for the first time, I heard the word diet and felt the need to apply it to myself. Of course, I knew what diets were, but I had never thought that it had anything to do with me until that day. And for the first time, I also got a serious, big, big bruising in my otherwise okay self-esteem. Because when you grow up in a body positive household, self-esteem, I mean, I had some issues with self-esteem, but it wasn't this big thing. It was just not an issue. We just lived our lives. It was just not a thing. But that came. That came that day with that comment. And I still remember it, and I get kind of this feeling in my stomach. It was very painful to hear that and to feel that, because it was just new. It was new to me. I've gotten so many since then, by the way, but that was the first one. And I embarked, of course, on my first self-imposed and, by the way, also self-designed diet, the pineapple diet. And God knows where I heard that pineapples would help me. I have no idea where I got that one from or why I figured I could subsist on almost only pineapples. But, you know, the slices were cute and they were portable. And soon I was eating pineapple while my ex-boyfriend was sitting beside me and was eating a sandwich. And I remember staring at that sandwich like it was Leonardo DiCaprio in 1997. I mean, I was just out of my mind because I was completely malnourished and I wanted to eat. And I ate pineapple and I also started exercising for weight loss. And I soon started, oh, this makes me so sad. I soon started getting bruises all over my arms and my legs because of the serious anemia that I had and the serious restriction that I was putting myself through. And my mom, of course, started to notice because these bruises were everywhere. Every day I had a new one, and I hadn't fallen on anything. I hadn't bumped my arm with, you know, a cabinet or a door, nothing like that. So my mom started to notice, and it was back to eating normally. Only, of course, by this moment, you know, at this time, normal was for kids, and I was now starving, and I overate, and I gained even more weight than I had started with. So that was my friend, the pineapple diet. And although I would probably remember more instances in which this kind of creeped up maybe before then, I think that was the first one I ever tried. And very dangerous when you try to self-design a diet and you're a teenager, right? All right, next up on the list of the crazy diets is what I have called Slim Fast Comes in Chocolate. I am in. This is the name of that diet for me. Of course, I'm talking about Slim Fast, you know, those shakes that were so popular in the 90s. And I don't know if they still exist. I have no idea. But, you know, this was very popular back then. So way before smoothies were cool, way before I think the word smoothie probably even existed, right? We had milkshakes back then. But long before smoothies were cool, we had Slim Fast. Not that I'm saying that smoothies are a weight loss tool. They can be part of a healthy, balanced diet. They're delicious. But that's what was kind of similar to that back in the day, right? So two Slim Fast drinks a day, plus a sensible dinner is what you were supposed to do with that one, right? Now, under the watchful eye of my body positive mother, I wasn't able to sneak those in as easily, meaning I tried eating a bit less at mealtimes because I ate meals with my mom. She would see what I was doing, and I would have the shakes when no one was looking. And they came in chocolate flavor, so it seemed like a very good idea at the time. And they were, at least as far as I can remember, they tasted good. They were delicious. So you could buy the powder and make it at home, but the cans were even better, and they were much richer, and they had that really strong chocolate flavor. And they would soon fill up the back and hidden, and this was important, the hidden parts of our kitchen cabinets. So the ones that were way in the back that my mom wasn't going to see. And when it was time for the sensible dinner, you know, that part of this plan was a sensible dinner. When it was time for that, all bets were off. I would go crazy over food. And I mean crazy. All my mind did during the day was think about food, plan how I was going to eat my next meal, what I would have for dessert. It was the opposite of mindfulness come mealtime, let alone sensible, right? It was supposed to be a sensible dinner. It was nothing even akin to that. It was more like a how fast can I eat this so I can eat more kind of meal. You know what I'm talking about, right? How fast can I eat this so I can just put more in my mouth and in my stomach? And this fortunately didn't last very long, but it was the first state of a deprivation mindset. So that first pineapple diet, that did its harm. But this was the first time I fell into that mindset in which you're always thinking about food and obsessing over food because, yeah, well, it was just very, very hard, a very hard thing to do, at least the way I was doing it. And it was also the first diet to really leave me with a quote unquote, eat while you can feeling, right? That gut feeling that you have to eat while you can because you don't know when you're going to eat again. And this is a feeling that I wouldn't be able to shake off for years. Okay, let's move on to the next story. And this is the soup or salad at night diet. And this was designed by moi, might I add. So me again, I was such a diet designer back then. So who knows where I got this one from? I don't remember. I have just absolutely no idea. But soup and salad seemed light and it seemed healthy. So for some reason, I vowed to only have one of these two at dinner time. So not the two together, might I add. I had to choose. These were my only two options for dinner. I could choose. I could eat a salad or I could eat a soup. And I went through my tomato soup phase and my cream of mushroom soup phase. and boring broths and minestrone. And by the way, leek and potato soup, which is one of the most delicious soups on the planet. This one was a no-no. And this was a rule that I quickly started adding to the rules that I already had, right? I had these rules and I started adding more rules on top because, well, of course, it included the word potato in the name. So that one was out, right? Oh my God. And, you know, the salads that I ate, they were bland and boring. And this didn't last very long, of course. But, you know, for some reason, I've always enjoyed a good salad. And I still do after this little stunt that I did many years ago. But soups and I never got along again, with some exceptions, because there are some very delicious soups that I like. But it's just not in my head. I never think of having a soup. And we just never got along again, not in the same way. And I have to keep reminding myself to come up with recipes for our members, for the members of our online program, because I know how delicious and comforting soups can be, especially in the wintertime. And you can get lots of vegetables and delicious, hearty foods in there. And it can be amazing. But I have to keep reminding myself to make them and test them because they're just out of my head. And it was all because of this little diet that I did. And, you know, at that time, they were basically punishment. And we had a spat. And I never looked back after that. So what happened? Well, I quickly discovered that I wasn't losing weight on this diet. And before I could, quote unquote, try harder, because, you know, this was normally the second phase of any diet I tried, right? I first tried it, it didn't work, and then I had to try harder. Before I even attempted this with this soup or salad diet at night, the cookie monster in me came out to play and break the rules, as usually happens, right? Okay, next up is the tomato soup diet. So yeah, I got, look at this. This is so weird, right? I got sick of soups with my soup or salad diet, but later, I don't remember how far apart these two were, but later I went into the tomato soup diet. And yeah, isn't that, that's just crazy. Now, even after meeting my husband, who was then my boyfriend, of course, I was a teenager when I met him, even after meeting my husband, a man who not once in the now 17 years that we've been together has sent any negative body comments my way. And I know, right? I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. You know, a man who never made a single comment when I started to rapidly gain weight after my mother died or after the countless diets I went on. Because by the way, let me insert two spoiler alerts here. Spoiler alert number one, I gained weight after every single one, even if I lost weight, because of course, most of these diets, when they're so restrictive, they all work, right? But after, of course, I gained weight, usually more than I had had before. So that was spoiler alert number one, right? I gained weight after every single one rather quickly, by the way. And spoiler alert number two, the quote unquote maintenance phase, this is where they get you, right? You'll soon maintain and that's going to be easier. This maintenance phase of diets is kind of the equivalent of having a really close friend slowly convince you to join a cult while saying, oh, it's not a cult. Don't worry. It's not a cult. But why don't you, you know, sip on this Kool-Aid while we discuss it further? That's what maintenance phase in diets is like. Okay. And so even after all of this, and after having such a sweet and loving influence in my life, I'm talking about my husband again here. I digressed a little bit there. Even after that, I didn't stop with the diets. In fact, things got so much worse. Things got so much worse. My mother's illness got worse, and then she died. And with it came the weirdest grieving process. And it's one that I still feel that I'm going through sometimes. And dieting turned into the relief of being able to control something, like I mentioned before, right? So forget food addiction. Dieting addiction is a far more real thing, and overeating is the aftermath. Always, always. Now, I heard of the tomato soup diet right around the time my mom was going through a particularly rough health crisis. I do remember where this one came from. This one came from one of my husband's friends. He was a man and he was trying to lose weight and everybody in his family was doing it. And I heard him and I thought it was a great idea. So on this one, you were supposed to eat a special kind of tomato soup for breakfast and lunch and also for dinner for about a couple of nights, right? This was like the first phase. It has different phases. And then each night after that, you would add some additions to your plate at dinner. So it was tomato soup and one baked potato, or tomato soup and one small salad, or tomato soup and a piece of chicken, or tomato soup and one egg, and then back to only tomato soup, and then back to the baked potato. And God knows what would have happened next, because of course I lasted 10 days and then I went on a total food bender. Now, I have to say right now, I have to remind you that I'm not going to keep you here for 23 diets, okay? I'm about to share the last one for today's episode. We're going to have some more, and these are just the highlights, okay? I'm not going to tell you about 23. I'm going to tell you about the ones that had a big impact for some reason. They caused a lot of effects in my head and in my body, of course. So I'm not going to keep you here for 23. We're going to head into the last one for this episode. We're going to have more next week or in our next installment, whenever that is. So last one for today is the chicken broth and tasteless food diet. Now, of course, I'm mentioning, you know that I'm vegan. I'm mentioning lots of animal products because for most of my life, I wasn't vegan. So that's why I'm not inserting disclaimers after every single one. You know that I had many years before going vegan, in which I was eating everything. So literally everything, by the way, in between these diets especially. So, all right, last one, the chicken broth and tasteless food diet. So I have to tell you the story. One day when I was around 21, my aunt, and by aunt, you know, this is really a term of endearment since she was really my mom's best friend. She came over to bring me some chicken soup when I was sick. I had this horrible flu. It was the first one after my mother had died, which made it particularly hard because I was living alone for the first time and I was feeling so miserable. And my aunt came with her chicken soup, which, by the way, was famous. And she walked through the door and I saw that she had lost a ton of weight. In spite of the fact that she was always this tall and beautiful and slender woman, you know, if you saw her, you would say, why on earth is this woman on a diet? So while she watched me eat her famous chicken soup and, you know, she started telling me about this new diet that she was on. And side note on this awesome woman who I have admired and loved since I was born, she was always on a diet forever. And I'm sure she still is. She was always on a diet, always. And she was gorgeous. She was smart. She was funny. And she was always on a diet. It was kind of one of her, the things to describe her. And she was also the woman that took care of me countless times when my mother was in the hospital. And she would move into my house for weeks on end and keep me company and take me to school and take care of me and help me with my homework. And she also introduced me to lemon fries. Many years prior to that chicken soup and flu night, she was on her tuna fish diet, and she ate tuna for almost every meal and with tons of lemon drizzled on top and a little salad on the side. And she would always want to keep me happy, right? She was taking care of me. She was cooking my meals and she always wanted to keep me happy. So for the next few weeks, she made tuna and salad for her and tuna and French fries for me. Not that there weren't any other options, right? She would have made anything that I had asked for and she always offered. But I just kept asking for this meal over and over again because it included fries and ketchup. And this woman is responsible. This is a side note. She's responsible for the only handicap I have as a cook, according to husband. And it's that I try to add lemon to everything. That little thing that I do it goes back to the story. So for weeks, I drizzled lemon on the tuna, on the fries. I topped the fries with pepper and, of course, had lots of ketchup on the side. This was probably the first time I had ever heard of the word diet. Now, I wasn't the one on the diet, right? My aunt was. But it was the first time I had ever heard this word. And I was around 8. And although I didn't understand why she had to be on one, I didn't understand that part. I maybe didn't understand that she wanted to change her body. Maybe I didn't understand that. But I started to understand the concept of dieting. And it's that you have a piece of paper that says what you have to eat, and that's what you eat. That's the concept of dieting, right? However, I was unaware of the third part of this equation back then, because it turns out it really goes like this, right? You have a piece of paper that says what you have to eat, and that's what you eat until you can't. That's the real equation. That's the real equation. Anybody who has ever been on a diet knows this. But of course, I digress, and I'm going to go back to the chicken soup story. You know, after my flu was better, I made an appointment at the chicken soup diet place because this new diet that she was on, it was something that a nutritionist or a dietitian had created, and you went to an office and it all looked very fancy and very, you know, I don't know. It just looked very official. And I went to this I call it the chicken soup diet place, where for weeks to come, I would eat my meal plan. And I would receive fat-melting injections in my body, and I would undergo the weirdest treatment, which included these little kind of suction cups that they would move up and down my belly, which, by the way, the doctor had quickly titled my problem area, my quote-unquote problem area, as soon as I went for the first visit, right? This was my problem area, so that's where the little suction cups were located at. And, I laugh, but this is horrible. This is horrible, the things we put ourselves through. It's just horrible. Basically, I got to have, every time I went there, I got to have painful injections and then have a Hoover stuck to my stomach and then go home to eat bland food. Fun, right? That's what this diet was like. I've since called this diet the chicken soup diet, not because that was all I could eat. You know, the meal plan included other things. It included a small range of bland and uninteresting foods, almost no carbs and almost no fats. But because, and here I'm going to quote my doctor, I called it the chicken soup diet because he said, whenever you get extremely hungry, Kim, you can drink some chicken soup, but mostly just the broth, okay? So whenever you're really, really hungry, this is what you do. You drink some of that chicken soup, but just the broth, and then you keep going. So yeah, that's why it's called the chicken soup diet. You know, here I lost some weight. I gained back double the weight. And of course, I could never look at a bowl of chicken soup the same way again. It was such torture, I can't even tell you. So I'll say it again. For years, I thought my emotional and overeating problems came from living through a difficult situation at home with my mother's illness and everything that happened to us. And that is partly true, right? That's partly true. That's where some of these patterns kind of started. But the truth is that it wasn't the occasional popcorn binge that was the problem. It was the dieting. And it was the restriction and the knowing that any fun or enjoyment I was getting through food wouldn't last very long. It was only going to be there for a little while, so I had to take advantage of it, right? That's where overeating starts. And it was a battle against my body caused by thinking that I had to have the body that people had in magazines in order to be accepted and to fit in. You know, this is what I had so desperately craved since I was little. I wanted to fit in. And it was what I desperately craved because so many things in my life constantly put me in the quote unquote, she's different category, right? Being really short or having braces and glasses, having no dad in the picture, having a mom with a disability, being terrible at sports, but good at school. And by the way, these two together, terrible at sports, good at school, these are two very uncool things in the world of a teenager. I was shy. I mean, I could go on and on, but being different, it's something I relish now, right? It's something I relish now, but that took years. It took forever. And body image and dieting, it's something that when it's mixed with these feelings as teens, we just latch onto that. And this kind of fall down that rabbit hole that I talked about last week, that's where it starts. That's when it starts. And it was all the diets that started it all, which is why this series is all about them. And, you know, that's it for today, but we're going to have more diets and more dieting stories in the Dieting Chronicles coming in our next installment, part two. But till then, this is all I want to say till then. Till then, remember that a cupcake is just a cupcake. Eat it, enjoy it, and then move on with your life. Thanks for listening in today. That was so much fun. Now, if you'd like to support this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you could subscribe and also leave us an awesome rating and review on iTunes. This really helps us rank higher in searches, and it helps other people who need this information find us. Now, to leave us a rating and review, all you have to do this on your phone is open your podcast app, then click the search icon, type in Bramble and go to our podcast, and then you click on the reviews tab and click write a review, and then you leave us your review. Pretty simple, right? Now, you can't do it from your own subscription feed to the podcast. I'm not sure why. So you have to do it from the search. Now, if you want to do it on your computer, open your iTunes, type in Brownville in the search bar, go to ratings and reviews, and leave it there. I will be so grateful if you can take the time to do this, since we really want to support others on their journey. This content is completely free, so all we need is to reach other people who are looking for this information, looking for support, and we need your help to do it. So thank you so, so much for listening today. And as usual, I will see you next week with more on Thursday. That's our little date. Bye-bye.